Question number 11113, rule 12.
Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 13. We were talking about your time on the Western Front, late 1917, early 18, round about the Somme area. And you were saying there was a time when you were out at rest.
Coming out from the line, coming out, the battalion coming out on rest, or coming out to a rest. You used to say coming on rest, that was the expression which we used. And the battalion was halted along a roadside for the usual 10 minutes halt, you know. And we were called upon to stand up because the king was coming along this road. And we're expected to cheer the king when he came along. We stood up as we would, it was an order. Where we stood up, no such thing as standing up, as you. We stood up just from where we were. And this cavalcade came along, the king in this car, and the attendants in all the cars behind. And the officers, of course, they did cheer, they hoorah, but I have no recollection of any of the men, because after a period up in the front line, you weren't in any mood to cheer anybody. All you wanted to do was get back, get cleaned up, and have a few days' rest. But that was what we were expected to. But it's quite true. A long time afterwards.
Did they actually tell you to cheer?
Oh yes, yes.
Did the men shout anything, or what happened?
No, I never heard in the particular part where I never heard any of the men cheer, but the officers, of course, did.
Did they shout anything?
Oh, yeah, hooray, hooray. Oh, they lifted their steel hats up, you know.
The officers did?
Oh, yes.
And what did the men do? Did they say anything?
Nothing at all, only a lot of very crude and rude remarks, you know.
They actually made remarks?
Oh, yes, amongst themselves, of course. Didn't shout them out or anything like that, you know. Oh, no, there was no display of animosity in that respect.
So it was more muttering.
Oh yes. Mind you, a motor cavalcade. It doesn't take. It's only a flash pass. It's gone. You see.
So would the king have been aware that you weren't cheering?
I don't think so. I very much question whether he thought of that.
Was there more than one car then?
Oh yes. There was a staff car behind. Well, I think there was a couple of cars behind him.
Were they open top cars?
Oh, yes.
Did you actually see the king?
Oh, yes. Of course you see him. Well, he was a little fellow with a beard, you know.
So, but the officers did cheer?
Oh, yes, the officers did.
And then you were saying that
Later on, a newspaper arrived up the line, and there used to be a Paris edition of the Daily Mail, which occasionally got up the line, sometimes depending on where you were, how quiet it was, and what transport was available. Sometimes it's even got up there the day following the publication. But I don't know about it. Eventually, this newspaper was handed round, and this photograph was in it. And everybody knew it was the photograph of the part of the part of the road where we were, where this photograph had been taken. Everybody knew.
Could you recognise the men and officers in it then? Did you recognise yourself?
Oh, yes. They wasn't a clear-cut photograph like a Paul studio photograph. It wasn't that. Oh, yes, you could tell who it was, you know, because the king in this car, you know, and
that you were certain it was your battalion?
Oh, absolutely certain. Everybody would have staked their life on the fact.
And what was the caption on the photograph?
No, I don't know that. I couldn't say that because the thing was getting a bit grubby by the time it came with everybody would have a look at this thing, you know.
But what was the photograph supposed to be?
Well, I would say it was a propaganda photograph. To show to the people at home how the king was right up in the firing line and how the troops welcomed him. And that was the background to the story which was being written at the time, you
so
know.
So the photograph was meant to be of you cheering the king?
Oh, yes, it was meant to be. And they would see, on this photograph, you could see pictures of officers with the steel helmets on. And we were really mucky because it had been raining. We were a bit mucky.
So it was meant to be of you cheering, but
weren't? We weren't, no.
Did you realise you were having your photograph taken?
No. And if they had realised, nobody would have bothered me. You weren't in a photographic mood at all. All you wanted to do was get away, get back. I think just after that, we were met by a tea thing. It was like a big boiler. They used to bring it up and brew tea, and you get your first drink of tea perhaps for many a day there.
Now, while you were out of the line, what sort of recreations would you have? What would you do to amuse yourself when you had time off?
Mainly, for quite a while. First day or two, you were busy cleaning yourself up, you know. Really.
How would you get the mud off your uniform?
Well, it went dry, you scraped it off.
What with?
Anything.
You said that you didn't have to polish your buttons, though?
No, I didn't polish the buttons. No.
Would you have any. Would you play games?
Well, there was always a football knocking about. There's always a football.
Did you play football?
Oh yes, and then there were these. They were known as housey, the forerunner of bingo, you know. And the possession of a housey game, they put you in the upper income bracket. They really did. And how they worked those? They had cards. These numbers on just these were cards, whereas today the strips of paper where they score the numbers out. Well, in those days, you didn't do that. You covered the if you had it when you know you're how they play bingo. You shout a number, they score it out. Well, in those days, they covered it with something, anything. Matchsticks broken, a bit of stone, anything. And they used to charge about a penny for a line, tuppence for a full house. Now that seems nothing. But there were so many cards, and the man who owned these cards, he used to call. The tricks I've seen done over bingo, over this housey.
What do you mean? What sort of thing?
Well, for instance, you understand that you're not sitting in the hall, you sit. If anywhere, open spaces, and they sat round, and they get a card. Now, the idea was, in many cases, they get two cards. You see, like we're now, people have two strips of bingo and play two games. So they get two cards, but they were used to pay for one, because when the bloke used to come round to collect the money, they used to drag some dirt over one card, some pay for one. You know, as soon as he'd gone, tip it off and play it too. Now that was a regular thing. That became a battle between the owner of the cards and the players. The order usually, he called the numbers, and he'd have some of his henchmen going round collecting whatever it was. I forget now, really. Small stake and small prizes, but they mounted up. They mounted up for the owner of the set of cards. They were... The value of them, you couldn't... If you had anybody that had a set of cards, unusually, there'd only be one set of cards in a company. Only one. There was no competition because you couldn't buy them. And how they were acquired, I don't know. Except they were acquired in the same manner I acquired one. And I acquired it off a man who got wounded. And I went down with this man to the battalion aid post. He'd been wounded in the groin down here. Well, it's private, so the matter of fact. And he was in a lot of pain. And when they were carting away, he said, "You can have my house," he said. And it was in a bag. The numbers were little wooden cylinders like that with a number stamped on. And he said, "You can have them." And I got this bag with the scores of cards and these numbers. It didn't do me a great lot of good because I'm only a youngster. And I was taken for a ride often enough. I was given good advice, said to pick the biggest rogues you can find, especially the big fellas, and let them collect the money. Because you knew you'd get robbed. We also knew you'd get there'd be something for you. And I did that. And they'd go around and they would know him, so she's collecting. They'd bring this money and they'd shovel it into a cap. And there's money piled in the cap, you know. And you paid out after every game, and it didn't take long to run the game, you know. I made a lot of money with that. I lost it, though, because somebody nicked the lot off me. I got wounded.
I'll come to that later, but how did you actually do the calling then?
Oh, I have done. Oh, yes. And sometimes you get somebody else to do it.
Did they have the sort of... I mean, in bingo games now, they have stylized ways of calling.
Oh, no. A lot of the names that were used then are still used today, like clickety-click. But the nom-de-plumes, if that's the right word, that are used today, like they would say Maggie's Den or number 10, they would reference it, but they do today. But they had various methods of identifying. Oh, for number 9, doctor's orders. The reason for that was a number 9, it was what a doctor... the doctor gave you, it was a purgative. And of course, if you went to the doctor with your stomach ache, you got a number 9 pill. That was regular. So number 9 became known as doctor's orders. And things like that, you know.
And you made quite a bit of money on
that. Oh,
yes. Because it was stolen.
Yes. But it would have been all right if I could have sent this money home. It was dirty, grubby, franc notes. Piles of them. But there was no facilities for sending it home.
Could you not have spent it at your canteen?
There's not very... No, you couldn't. What I've done, and other people do. If beer came up, the barrel of beer would come up sometimes to the... where you were out on rest. The man who owned the house, he said. He'd buy a bucket of beer and anybody could have a dip in at it. That was one way of it spent. But apart from that, if there was anything going that you had the money to do it, you were a He was one of the money barons. You're always blending money. By that way.
So you made more from your bingo, your housey-housey, than you did from your pay, would you?
Oh, pay was peanuts. You never knew when you came out of the line how much your pay was going to be, because it depended what they decided to pay you. If they paid you less than your statutory wage, it went in your credit, and you in theory you could ask and find out how much you were in credit, but he became very popular. He started doing that, you see, because the quartermaster all tough.
So your housey-housey was more important?
Oh, much more.
What about the other gambling games? Did you ever run a crown and anchor?
No.
Why not?
Because I couldn't get the crown and anchor boards with us, just the same as these games. The possession of a crown and anchor board were just like the possession of a housey-housey game.
Crown and anchor was more illegal, though, wasn't it? Because housey-housey...
Oh, yeah, housey-housey was legal. Crown and anchor was illegal, yeah.
Did you ever play it?
Oh, many times.
What sort of a game was it? Because they don't play it now, do they?
It's 1,000,000 to 1 they play it in the Navy. 1,000,000 to 1 they do.
What about in the Army, though, where you were?
Well, yes, they, but it's more predominantly in the Navy, but in every unit had I'd have somebody with a crown and anchor board.
How did it work? Do you remember?
Now, I'm a little bit vague about that. It used to be like a linoleum thing that they could roll up, and there's 4 squares, crown, and they had painted on or whatever, a crown and an anchor, and they used to roll a dice which had crowns and anchors on the sides, you see. And you roll this dice, and whatever it came up, they paid out on. As far as I can remember now, it would be about an equal chance, because there were a similar number of crowns as there were anchors. But they made a lot of money with it.
It had a reputation that it was more difficult for the punter to win on, you know, rather than the person who owned it.
Well, yes, because there used to be a lot of fiddling went on.
How?
Loaded dice. But, as I said, that's why all the older people that had them... You couldn't have got a youngster running one of them, because I think they could change the dice depending on how much money they were on which one, the crown or the anchor. And this is how they used to... I think that's how they used to do it.
You played it a bit, though.
Oh, many times I've had a bash at it. Many
times.
Yes, you win. You win and lose, but invariably you finish up losing. Oh, yes.
Do you play any other gambling games? Did they play brag or anything?
Oh,
like
yes,
that?
Brag. I learned brag there. Brag was one of the principal games. Brag.
Which version?
I don't mean by which version. I only know one.
3 or 5 card? Or...
Oh, 3. 3. Oh, yeah. And they used to... Before a game started, they'd establish certain rules, because varied in different places, like which was the top prile. A prile is 3 of a kind. Which was the top? Well, some schools would have ace was the top, but in the main it was 3s, a prile of trays, they call it. A pile of 3s could not be beaten. So, and then there again, it was it became an understood thing in a lot of schools. Anybody who had a pile of trees wouldn't brag beyond a certain amount. They'd throw their hand in because they knew they were really, they couldn't be beaten.
So there were limits on how much you could bet?
Oh, yes, yes.
Were there any other gambling games you played?
They play pitch and toss.
What was that?
They used to have two pennies. And some used them on their hand, and somebody had put them on a stick. And they throw them up in the air so that they twist round, and then they fall on the floor. The bet was odds or evens. Two of a kind, or one of either. That became a very popular game, very popular. They used to have congregating crowds for that, you know. And they kept a space in the middle of a ring clear. And there'd be one fella who'd be using... They'd put two coins on that and they'd go...
Flip it.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, there was another man would... He was like the umpire. He would say what it was. And when he picked them up, he would polish them so that the coins, they were always bright, you know, like new coins. It was just pitch and toss.
Would you win or lose, besides, I know you won a lot of money at Housey. Would you win or lose much money at the other ones?
No. Invariably you lost. But it was a form of escape. It was something to do. Oh, yeah.
What about other games, but not gambling games? Did you play?
Well, there were football. And with our battalion, they had a... I think the battalion officer was very good. He used to organise, even out of the line, he would organise relays. And they would set off with four platoons to a company. And they would set off and they would drop a man every so often. Every few hundred yards. And they'd work a course round until they got to the finish, which is usually where you started. But they dropped a lot and they dropped four men off at every place. And then they'd start. And... you ran. That's the best way you could. And it was just like a relay race. You handed your baton, or baton, whatever they call them, to the man of your platoon. And it passed on until there was a winner.
And how far would that be?
Oh, well, it depends. It'd be quite a long way. But you only ran 400 yards, perhaps.
And what would you be? Would you be in your kit or?
No. They didn't have us running in them. I think people would have rebelled at that. This was recreation, and there was always the prizes. There was always prizes for the winners, but I never knew anything other than cigarettes, a pile of cigarettes for them, and they became very popular things.
Anything else?
Not that I can remember.
Did you ever go to the canteens run by any of the...
Oh, yes. If there was a canteen, and there usually was...
What was it like? What would it be like?
Well, the best building that they could find, they'd make into a canteen. And they'd serve such a meal as they were able to get up, like cigarettes... toothpaste, funny enough.
Would it be wet or dry? Would they serve beer?
There was a canteen there. They didn't differentiate between a wet canteen or a dry. It was just a canteen because they'd feel themselves lucky that they'd got a building at all to house a canteen in. Everybody said the canteen manager were a fraud and the usual things that people grumble about.
Would you go there often?
Well, it depended on if you had money to go with.
When you had the bingo, would you go there? Because you'd have more money then. Would you go
well,
more often?
No, we were too busy playing bingo. No time for anything like that. Just collecting the money.
So you didn't have time to spend it in the
canteen? Oh, dang. The money piled up. The money piled up in this. It was a coloured bag, string at the top, a drawstring at the top. Oh!
Could you not play your bingo in the canteen? Would they not let you?
No, they didn't play it in the canteen. No. Huh?
What about? Did you ever go besides the canteen? Did you ever go to the local estaminets when you were right back?
Occasionally.
What were they like?
Very basic, because the people that ran them, were, middle-aged, and their staminas, they were more noted for their food than for their drink. Now, what do we used to drink? What we call vin something, vin rouge or something. I think that was the name. But for food, there was only one thing they sold, egg and chips. And I think, I always said that it was through service in France that the egg and chips became so popular, and it's been a mixture ever since, egg and chips. I don't quite know. But Madame knew it egg and chips. The French was, I don't know, earth and pomme or something like that.
Had you not eaten that mixture before the war?
Oh, no, I'd never heard of it before I went to France. Never heard of it. And I never knew anybody else that had. But you ate it there, and he did charge a franc for it, 1 franc. And it was wonderful, you know, egg and some chips.
What about the wine? Would you be able to get much wine? Would there be much drinking done?
No, not a great lot. Not a great lot. You'd be glad when the beer came up, you know.
You didn't like the wine much then?
Not much, no. I don't think. We're not a wine drinking country at all. It was beer.
Would they water the wine down a bit?
Well, I couldn't even say that. I don't know, because I couldn't have told you whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. No. But those were the general things that happen when you spent a lot of time. Writing letters and waiting to receive your mail, which was one of the highlights of every day when the mail came up, you know, because if people only knew the value of a letter under such circumstances, it's unbelievable. And I and my brothers, we were doubly fortunate that whenever my mother always wrote to us, there was three of us, and she wrote to us in turn, and always, she was rather large size envelope. Her letters were usually, you knew what were in the letters before you opened it. And there'd be 2 packets of woodbines in, and there were 5 for a penny then, would buy 5 for a penny, and they were in an home top paper packet. And my mother used to stick 6 months inside the. Now, and she stuck it there with starch. In those days, they washed, and when they were ironing something, they stiffened it by mixing starch. And my mother used to save some starch so that she could just dip her finger in it and just smear the inside of a wood bar packet and put sixpence there. So when we received a letter, we always got a letter, two packets of wood bars and sixpence, and it was a highlight.